Welcome to Bankless Africa. We delve deeper into the borderless world of the new frontier. This is Miss Purple, and I will be your inquisitive guide on this ever-evolving journey. Layer 2s are having a whale of a time, all puns intended. Specifically, Optimism, which has a TVL of over $680 million as of the 31st of August 2023. Now, before we get into the conversation, if you haven't already, please do subscribe, whether you're listening via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or any other platform. Please do leave us a comment or a review so we can continue to bring you the kind of content that you want to see and hear moving forward. We will include all the links that we allude to during this episode in the show notes, so be sure to check those out as well. On today's episode, we have one of the most OG Bankless Africa core contributors and delegate for both Arbitrum and Optimism Think Decade. Welcome to Bankless Africa.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. GM everyone, what up?
So for those who perhaps haven't heard of you, I know you were kind of, you know, you're all over the place. Many people have come across you in one way or another, but for those who haven't, give us a quick, you know, maybe five-line, four-line intro on Think Decade and, you know, your entire journey to here and what essentially makes you qualified to be on the other side of this conversation.
Yeah, five-line, four lines of my journey is like Mission Impossible 7. All right, so I got very serious about crypto in 2019, got in. So that was when I started my journey. Along the line, I got racked, got into a lot of, you know, not good stuff with crypto, like leverage trading and all of that, simply because of like the information I had access to that time. So it got to a point where, you know, I got liquidated, got racked, got scammed so many times. I wanted to leave crypto, but finally came across What Bitcoin Did podcast and the book, The Bitcoin Standard. That changed my perspective and everything that I knew about the technology. And I began to understand what the technology is all about, also the philosophical aspect of this whole Web3 and crypto movement. And then after that, I delved deeper into the rabbit hole, came across the Bankless podcast. I started listening to it very well, and that got me into the Ethereum ecosystem. And then after that, the Bankless DAO launched. I was there day zero. Joined the DAO, loved what they were doing. The mission spoke to me directly. From there, I started contributing in the Bankless DAO and also dropped the first proposal to launch Bankless Africa. And so that's where Bankless Africa just came from. And yeah, it's been like bringing legit crypto education and information to everyday Africans, guiding them and making sure that they don't fall victim to some of the problems and challenges we had when we were getting into crypto. Then from there, I also started engaging or participating in a lot of DAOs. Like you mentioned, Optimism, Arbitrum is such example of DAOs that I contribute to. I love DAO operations. I also love governance. So these are some of the areas that I'm heads down doing stuff in. So I hope this captures, you said five lines. I gave you like three lines. So I think I did well.
I think you did. I think you did pretty good. I think you did pretty good there. Because I know your story is one of those super lengthy ones, but I have to applaud you on that one. Now, to give a bit of context to the kind of conversation we're going to have. So if you can see by the title, it's called Making a Case for L2s. So to make a case rather for L2s, I think we have to touch a bit on the history side of things. So history hasn't exactly been very kind to the global south, in particular to Africa. Now, a quick overview of how traditional finance in particular has failed Africa and why it gives Africans no hope for a potential future is that traditional finance essentially just a brief definition. It's the sources of financing obtained from the banking system and or capital markets, such as bank loans, bond issuances, stock issuances, right? Now, with that in mind, for example, Sékou Touré of Guinea decided in 1958 to get out of the French colonial empire and opted for the country's independence. The French colonial elite in Paris obviously got furious. And in a historic act of fury and French administration in Guinea, they destroyed everything in the country which represented what they called as the benefits from French colonialism. It's insane. But that continues to happen. Now, despite the largely symbolic break from a colonial history with France, there are still 14 countries that I know of that have remained indebted to France since the liberation from them in the 1960s. And those countries are Benin, Burkina Faso, Senegal, Côte d'Ivoire, Mali, Niger, Togo, Cameroon, Central African Republic, Guinea-Bissau, Equatorial Guinea, Chad, Congo-Brazzaville, and Gabon. 85% of their foreign reserves have to be put into the France Central Bank. In your, perspective, think decade, how do you think the way that TradFi has shaped our, understanding of money and finances as Africans, how do you think crypto as a whole can help to change that in particular? So in a general, broad way, how is it any different from TradFi? What difference will it make from the old system?
That's a great question. But before I get to the question, I just want to just say that those were some really interesting perspective that you shared. What I would say is that everything has to do with TradFi, right? Like the coup going on, and by the way, in the last couple of years, like the last 5 years or so, there've been like almost, I think, over six or about six different coups that have happened in various African countries, predominantly in the French-speaking African countries, right? And again, in my perspective or in my opinion, I think everything has to do with money. The society cannot function without like good money or good monetary system, right? So all these frustrations that is happening in various African countries is as a result of people not getting everyday, stuff, basic stuff. And if you track everything down to like the bottom of it all comes down to the financial system that we have inherited. A lot of people like to say that a lot of African countries got independence, political independence, but we did not get economic independence, right? You have all these, like almost all of the African countries, the monies are tied to Western country like money. So even with Gabon, they spend the CFA, which is tied to the French money. So if you analyze the whole situation, if you look at the whole mess, everything comes down to the monetary system that we inherited. And of course, this is not a system that was built to benefit Africans. It was built to extract value from the African continent. If we can fix the money, or if we can have a better monetary system, then society or a lot of African countries or Africa in general can start to be very good. We can be in a very good position socially, economically, and all of that, right? And so this is where crypto comes in. If you look at traditional financial system, every angle you look at it seems there is no way out, and so for a very long time, people have tried to come out with alternatives or have demonstrated the frustration and see if government can build systems that will help. But every time within the traditional financial system, it doesn't work, so how do you make a change when you are within the same system? It's almost impossible, right? So what crypto has given us finally is an alternative system, right? Which is now parallel to the current monetary system that we have, where people can opt out of the current monetary system into this new system. And if you look at since the advent of Bitcoin, I always, of course, Bitcoin is the starting point. Since the advent of Bitcoin, if you take Bitcoin as a currency or as a store of value, there is no fiat currency. Fiat currency, that is government-backed currencies that have outperformed Bitcoin since its inception, right? So if you got onto the Bitcoin bandwagon years ago and you stored your hard-earned money, hard-earned wealth in Bitcoin, for the past 10 years, you would have outperformed any major currency, US dollar, local currency, etc., in the world. So this is the kind of system that we have now had, And it is so optimistic, and it is so good when you delve into it, like, very deep. All right, and for Africans, it's game changing.
So I'm curious about, you know, we've concluded, and I think everybody kind of concludes, that crypto is obviously a game changer system. Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't have its faults. It doesn't mean that there are still some kinks that need to be worked out. But I'm curious then, do, in this case, any other African country, do they have to wait, or do we have to wait for, you know, the government and the official bodies to do the things that make the things happen? Or can we start our own economic revolution without needing them to do anything else?
The interesting thing is that it has already started with the crypto movement, and I love it. I get so passionate when I'm talking about this, because the crypto movement is a peer-to-peer movement, right? It's permissionless. Good, that's the word. It's permissionless. You don't, for the first time, you don't need permission to use this monetary system. You don't need permission to engage in the economic activities that this system gives you. Right? So take, for example, you can use that remittance or money transfer, right? We live in like a very interconnected world where people now offer services to other people and all of that. They create value and all of that. But it's so difficult to transfer money from one country to the other that no matter how you think about it, it's like it does not make sense, right? And by the way, the canon event for me that got me into crypto was I was trying to do an international payment, and I was trying to use PayPal. And I was told that because of the country in which I am, Ghana, we have been, in quotes, blacklisted. So I cannot use PayPal to do any international money transfer. Right? And so a friend said, okay, use Bitcoin, right? Like, Bitcoin can do it. I said, really? Within like a minute, I had done the transfer. And it was game changing, right? And everyone who comes into assets is able to do such thing. They sit back and say, God damn, this is like, so this is where that, so this is, you, for the first time, we don't need any government. We don't need any central authorities to be able to engage in economic activities that benefit us, right? So the answer to your question is a resounding no. We don't need government. We don't need centralized authorities, bodies to tell us what to do right now, especially in the ways that we can put our money to use, right? So that is what the crypto/Web3 movement is all about. There's DeFi. There's this whole new financial applications and financial rails that are now operating on Web3 that any African can deploy their capital or engage in economic activities on these systems.
I am absolutely for that, by all means necessary, because I think I have an old friend who used to say, you know, do the things, go make the change, go be the catalyst, the law will follow after. And she was a lawyer, you know, so that coming from her made me feel like, okay, maybe she's onto something, because, you know, the systems are not about to build legislation or regulation for things that they don't see in action, because for them that's a waste of time, right? So they need to first see things in action. They need to feel that maybe this needs some kind of intervention. Then only then do they come in and say, okay, maybe this, you know, we need to figure this out. Now there's this conversation, this statement that is said often, and it's essentially the great promise of crypto. I know you've said it multiple times. Essentially implies, you know, that crypto is at its advent, and there is so much more that is possible, so much that it can change. Now, this idea that crypto promises a whole new world of access and opportunity is common, yes, and those of us who are here may agree with it. However, there is a lady that I came across who goes by the pseudonym of Chiamaka, and she said, and I quote, "I used to be bullish on crypto because I believed it could liberate Africans financially. Instead, it has managed to do the opposite so far, at least for me and a few of my friends." End quote. Now, I think we all saw what happened with the other things. I refuse to name them because I'm not going to give them another time of day. But we saw what happened last year with multiple exchanges, multiple projects, organizations, heck, even banks, you know. People like Chiamaka are not incorrect in saying that for them and perhaps their friends, it has done the complete opposite. Heck, but my question is, where has this promise gone wrong? Does it still stand? Can we truly say crypto has a great promise for people and specifically for Africans? Or are we just grasping at straws and hoping that it still does, even though perhaps maybe that's not to be?
The promise of crypto has, in a way, on a spectrum. In fact, it's more important now than like more than ever. And in fact, it's a long journey. And if you look at the milestones so far, it's been absolutely amazing, right? Don't forget, this is an entire infrastructure, one, a social movement, two, a philosophical, movement or change that Web3 or crypto is trying to bring into the world. And the system or the traditional system it's trying to disrupt are systems that have been active for what, hundreds of years, right? So it's not going to take a couple of years for the great promise of crypto to be realized. It's going to take a lot of years, right? But let's strip it down to the basics. Let's strip it down to the basic in the sense that one, Bitcoin promised a better form of money, and then also being able to transact with one another or two different parties being able to transact in a non or in a borderless way, right? In a way that's not possible with the financial system. So wherever you are, Miss Purple, in the world right now, I could log in into my Bitcoin wallet and send you Bitcoin, you will receive it, right? And it works, right? Now, if you strip it down, all of these things work. And if you want to use it, you can actually use it, right? I can send you Bitcoin right now and it works perfectly. Where the problem has been is that people have really started, or people have adopted the technology to a point where there is now scalability issues, right? The network is getting congested. And so the technology is so good that people who get access to this technology and use it for what it is intended, its intended purpose. And I want to hammer this, right? Web3 and crypto has a lot of intended purpose, but it also has, it's a tool. So however you want to use the tool, you have to be careful, right? There are ways that you use it and then you get ragged. Your money, you burn your money. So my advice is that what it promises, if you can use it for those things, like the money transfers and all of that, it really, really works. There are constraints in those aspects, like I said, with the scalability issues, right? And then now, when a lot of people started using the network or the technology and were adopting it, the fees you have to pay to use it or to transfer money on these networks also started going parabolic, right? So it was now difficult to now transfer money to someone because of the network fees or which we popularly call gas, right? Or gas fees. And so for Africans, it became like a very big problem, or it is a very big problem because sometimes the money that we transfer, it's not huge money. So paying more to transfer money becomes a way that we are no more able to use the technology, right? And that has also been one of the key complaints or problems we've had with traditional financial systems, where even when you have the opportunity to send money to someone, there is so much value extraction in the transaction that you do that it becomes unreasonable to do the transaction, right? A friend of mine was transferring like $10 to someone and he was paying like five times the amount. And he was like, you know what, screw it. I'm no more transferring the money. And this was like a traditional financial payment rail, right? And crypto solved it by, enabling us to pay smaller fees to be able to transact with people. But as the technology got more popular and more people understood and started using it started facing a lot more challenges. And so these are technological and growing pains. Thank you. That's like technological challenges, which are growing pains, But there are things that you have some of the brilliant minds in the world working on it right now. So the Great Promise is still in full swing, and there are a lot of ways that you can still use the crypto technology. It hasn't been that bad, unless you are number one, gambling, shitcoining, or leverage trading, right? And I want to read this real quick, because it's very, very important, right? So a guy confessed on X, formerly Twitter, that he stole his grandma's money, $50,000, and then went long on Bitcoin. So he was leverage trading, right? He put it into leverage trading. And he made so much money when Bitcoin hit $60,000. And he put another 20K, which he stole again. He stole from his parents. So after 50K from his grandma, he stole another 20K from his parents, and then went long on Bitcoin, thinking that Bitcoin will hit $100,000 and that is it. He'll be set for life. Unfortunately, if you've been in Web3 space, we are in a bear market. The bear hit so hard. Bitcoin tanked so hard that it was a very, very terrible experience for a lot of people. But for leverage trading people, it was too much to bear. He lost everything, and now he says that he's borderline homeless. He sold his car, and he's living in shelters, right? And he bought Pepe too. Pepe is like a meme coin. He longed Pepe too, and that also crashed. And now he doesn't know what to do with himself, and he's so frustrated and psychologically molested. This is what we are talking about. Don't gamble with crypto. You have to be careful. It's a good technology to be used for legit stuff, but if you mess around with the technology like leverage trading, you are going to get burned. And if you don't take care, your narrative would be that the technology hasn't really helped you or hasn't done what it's promised to do. But that will not be the case, right? The technology is how you use it is the most important thing. Over to you, Ms. Pepper.
You know, things like that, just they remind you just how desperate human beings can get. And I think that desperation and that greed tends to stand in the way so many times of the progress we continue to make. So, you know, I think this is why I enjoy what we do at Bankless Africa so much, is that, you know, we try as much as we can to educate people and to share with people the realities of certain things, but also the possibilities.
Listen, crypto is not a get rich quick scheme, right? It's like saying that you want to get rich real quick with what the traditional financial system stuff, right? Like, it's a technology, it's an infrastructure, so I like this thing that Bitcoiners always like, they always put out there. They say that Bitcoin itself is like, it's a technology to store your hard-earned money. It's a technology that helps your life become better, because you have currencies out there that they forever depreciate, they devalue. And so being able to have a technology where you can store, or money that you can store your hard-earned wealth in there, is very, very important, right? So you need to understand that the technology that Web3 or crypto has given to humanity, it's a way for us to have a better system that works for us in so many ways, right? And I continuously quote this economically, socially, and philosophically. Like, it's this entire new system. And so it is not a get quick rich scheme. And a lot of the people, 99.999% of people who approach crypto with the mindset of getting rich real quick, they end up burning themselves, and they end up blaming themselves again. So the way you approach this technology, it's very, very important. And that's why, like Ms. Pepo said, Bankless Africa has been doing such an awesome job in educating Africans and letting us, right, each and every African, understand that this technology is something else. It's something that gives freedom in so many ways. And it is not for you to, you know, get in there and to get rich. Also, there's a meme going to the moon, It's all good, right? The memes are nice, but you need to understand that before you can get to the moon, you need to get like money for the rockets and all of that. And you do that by not aping everything you have into shit coins and leverage trading. You do that by creating value in Web3, by, you know, doing stuff. There's so many things you can do, which maybe we'll go into it in subsequent episodes.
You know, the reality of this great promise is that there are problems everywhere. You know, we've already mentioned the multitudes of scams that are running around and will continue to be there, I think, till the end of time, because human beings are greedy things. You know, that's what we are, essentially. There has also been an unprecedented amount of bank runs, unfortunately. It's part of TradFi, right? These are inevitable, unfortunately. So for as long as we are connected in that manner to TradFi, there are people who will unfortunately get wiped out because of bank runs. Now, the one that, you know, we've alluded to and touched here on the show quite often is, of course, the reality of gas fees, right? Can you talk more about what L2s promise, like the opportunity that comes with L2s, outside of just, you know, gas fees low? Like, for some people, it's like, okay, yeah, cheaper gas fees, so what, right? But obviously for a bunch of other people, it means it's an ease of access, right? There's more scalability because gas fees are low. So it kind of snowballs into a bunch of different opportunities that are then available to people. But can you talk more about, you know, what this case for L2s would essentially be? Why should it even matter? You know, can't people just chill and enjoy being on ETH L1 or on Bitcoin? Isn't that good enough?
Yo, let me make this clear. ETH layer 1 is for rich people. Yo, get off ETH layer 1. I had one of our community members sent me a DM. He was like, yo, I need gas for this quick transaction I'm trying to do. And I was like, bro, the hell are you doing on layer 1? Get on to layer 2, right? There's a reason why everyone is running to layer 2s. And gas fees, like you said, or transaction fees is one of the main problems that that have plagued the crypto world for the past couple of years, right? If you are ranking the villains of the blockchain world, if gas fees is not number one, you know what? I would put gas fees number one. Because if you have all of the technology, right? If you have all the technology and people cannot use it simply because they have to pay more to use it, or they don't have the money to pay to use the technology, it's useless. So that is what makes it like, that's what makes layer twos absolutely crucial, right? Because they provide an opportunity for people to use the blockchain without even realizing that they are paying to use the blockchain. So layer twos are scaling solutions, or you can think of them as blockchains that are built on layer ones like Ethereum, and they promise to take the burden or solve some of the challenges that layer one like Ethereum is facing. And like we've said, the gas fees or the transaction fees is one. So on layer twos, they have built these technologies that are able to offer people the ability to pay like very, very low and sometimes even negligible fees to engage in all of the transactions that they could have otherwise engaged in on Ethereum. And then on Ethereum, they have to empty their bank accounts and then borrow money from probably friends or parents to, you know, pay for the transaction. So that's what layer twos do. And throughout this this episode, we'll use optimism as like a case study, or we'll highlight optimism. It's one of the most popular layer twos. They are getting a lot of things right. So yeah, that's a TLDR, like explain it to me like I am five, layer two definition. Yeah.
I think that was a pretty decent definition. Perhaps in your other life, you were perhaps a teacher. But so what exactly makes L2s like Optimism so phenomenal outside of, you know, the fees? Like, I know that there is a plethora of of apps that are on that are available in OP, in the Optimism ecosystem rather, if in fact. So if you go to the Optimism website, you'll just see an endless amount of dApps. And obviously this is not me endorsing them, but this is me saying that there are a bunch of options. There is a lot of innovation. And if you're looking, I've already scrolled to the bottom of the screen. I've already said next, but I'm still on C. So there is a really, really long list. We don't have to go through everything on the show here, but you can always go check that out yourself and see what it is that you can find that can serve you. But at the end of the day, this is to say that people are building, and perhaps if you're a builder, perhaps you can consider building on L2. It doesn't have to be Optimism. It can be another one, right? So we're just in this particular episode, we're talking about Optimism because I guess it's one that we've been able to interact with more often, and we have a bit more experience in that. But also, it's one of the more one of the ones that are more forefront than a lot of the others right now. In particular, projects like Gitcoin, for example, and Forecaster have either operated or migrated to the OP stack. Also, most recently, of course, is Base, which has seen an insane amount of activity in the past month, thanks mostly to the Unchained Summer campaign that they have been running. But what other case can you make for Optimism in particular, not just L2s as a whole in like a general sense, but Optimism? Why Optimism? Why are you optimistic about Optimism?
So Optimism is like one of the very first layer two solutions that I've tried to solve some of the key challenges that the blockchain space is facing or layer ones are facing. And it's very important because, like we said, and we keep hammering on this, is that without like layer twos right now or what layer twos are building, this whole crypto thing would have kind of like crumbled down, right? Because people can use it. With Optimism specifically, they have a lot of stuff going on. So beyond solving the transaction fees issues, they are also helping to scale Ethereum, right? But the vibe of the Optimism community is all that matters, and they are all about public goods, right? They are all about public goods. And I think it's one of the things that separates Optimism from any other layer two ecosystem or technology that is being built right now. Optimism is all about impact and giving back to the world or people who build or make impact or provide some sort of value to what they are building, right? Probably again, probably we'll go into public goods in later episodes, but they've created this entire ecosystem slash coordination mechanism where they are solving a key challenge that layer ones, especially like Ethereum, is facing, whilst also providing value to the people who are helping to solve this problem, right? This challenge. And they are doing that via their public goods mechanism. And they have what they call the retroactive public goods funding mechanism, where if you've provided or if you provide value to contributing to solve this problem, you can basically get funded or you can get grants for what you are doing. And again, it's one of the key things that separates it from any other layer two out there. And then they have this something they call the fairness equation, which is quoted as impact is equal to profit. And yeah, it's what I said. If you provide value in a way that benefits a lot of people, then you should profit from providing that value, right? Which is again their way of putting out or their way of creating a narrative around the public good mechanism that they are using. So yeah, there is. So that is another stuff. The next one is that I think you literally showed it. There are a plethora of applications and a whole lot of things you can do on Optimism that, in fact, you might not even need to use Ethereum again. And for everyday Africans, my question is that why the hell would you even consider using Ethereum. Okay, there are a couple of things, but yeah, right now, 90% of the time, you can use Optimism for a lot of things. So like Miss Pepper have shown, they have DeFi, which is decentralized finance. They have GameFi, people who like to play games. They have blockchain games on there. They have derivatives, people who like to engage in all of this stuff. And these are all financial primitives. And they also have DAOs for people who have skills and would like to, you know, exchange those skills and get paid for that. You can engage in DAOs that are built on Optimism. So engaging in these economic activities on Optimism will ensure that the money you receive or the transactions you do is not, you know, you're able to do it like fluidly without worrying about gas fees, right? Or without worrying about maybe getting stuck because you don't have money to pay to transact. So that is, these are a couple of stuff that makes Optimism very, 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 very awesome. And then they also have their super chain thesis, which is basically extending what they have built to other people who want to leverage on that to build, right? So African developers can basically deploy their own blockchains now without the need to worry about all of the layer one stuff. They can build on the technology that Optimism have built to solve certain key challenges in Africa using the blockchain, right? Or using a layer two blockchain. Again, keep listening to Bankless Africa, right? Like, we have so many of these stuff that we'll be talking about in subsequent episode that you do not want to miss.
There is this infinite garden metaphor that is quite popular in the Ethereum ecosystem, the Ethereum communities. But I think in many ways, Optimism and a lot of L2s are showing this in practice because, you know, they still somehow in some way or another connected to ETH, right? Hence why they are L2s. They build on a certain baseline of technology that already existed. They're able to expand that. And of course, now with Optimism Superchain, it goes beyond that. I know that as Bankless Africa, you know, we're planning on doing more intentionally towards educating people about L2s in particular and what they could mean for us as a people, what they could mean for creators, developers, builders, heck, even just people who just want to use, you know, maybe you could not be interested in building any of the other tools. You just want to use a thing and have it do what it needs to do. And it could still do that for you. So I think, you know, in many ways, or rather in few words, essentially just keep your eyes on it, okay? Because there is so much that I've been able to see. I cannot think that there is going to be any less progress from here on out moving forward. But so in closing, can you give us three words that essentially describe why you're optimistic about the arbitrary future of financial access in Africa? All puns intended.
I guess the first one, of course, by default is optimistic. The second one is incentives alignment. And this is specific to like the layer twos and Optimism, right? Very, very optimistic about what they are building and the potential that it has for Africa. Second is incentive alignment. They have created this amazing, man, quite awesome, like incentive ecosystem where people who participate in this ecosystem have, you know, are incentivized, right? Or are paid for their contribution. And it's so amazing if you go into it very deeply. So I like the incentive alignment part. So optimistic incentive alignment and WAGMI.
I don't think I've heard, you know, WAGMI in a really, really long time. I think people have just been feeling like we're not making it, but there's still hope. You know what I mean? There's still hope. There's still a pretty long way to go. But by the time, if you're, you know, if you're interested in learning more about Optimism and what it is that they're doing, but also more specifically than anything from an African perspective, be sure to keep listening to Bankless Africa. We will be having a live episode that we will be recording at Eat Safari. So if you're in or around Kenya between, you know, during the dates of Eat Safari, be sure to come through. Find anybody that you can find that has a Bangladesh Africa cap or a t-shirt on and just ask them to connect you with Miss Purple, and we can maybe, you know, get a show going. It's always very, very interesting for me to hear from people's perspectives, whether you're on the ground or you're building something, or you're just curious about stuff. You know, I just like to hear one or two words from you, and maybe you can get featured on Bangladesh Africa, because that's what we do. You know, we expose people to the world, and we expose the world to Africa the Bangladesh way. And of course, by the time this also goes out, there will be a written piece that I'm putting together, accompanying it from a more research-based take on LTUs, but more particularly optimism. But with that, we have come to the end of the show. Thank you again, Think Decade, for you know, coming in front of the camera. I know you don't do this often, but I am grateful to have you on the show. Hopefully we can do more episodes like this, you know, where we can just kind of chop it up and just talk through a few ideas that we may have, or maybe just things that go on, you know, in and around the frontier space as a whole. Now, of course, disclaimer here that none of what we have shared is financial advice. Please always do your own research. Go look things up. If you don't understand maybe certain words we used, go look that up. Or if maybe you feel like you would like to get an episode on a particular topic, just let us know, and we can work that in, and we can figure out a way to, you know, better put it forth so that people are better able to understand, especially because the space tends to shift so rapidly and there's so many things that happen all in one go. So we fully understand, and we will do our part to continue to educate you as much as we can. Now remember that nothing is set in stone. There is a world out there yet to be discovered. But this time, Africa is at the core of the table.